Well, good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and once again bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Bill Sardi, who's a supporter of Radio Liberty, certainly a good friend. He's a health journalist. He does a great deal of research on so many subjects, which are of interest to you, should be of interest to every American, but you're not going to hear about this from the mainline columnists, the mainline pundits, the mainline commentators. And so we try to bring you that information that you really need to protect your health. Bill, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Great to be with you, Dr. Stan. It's an exciting time, certainly to cover health events, and certainly it's mixed with a lot of politics every time. And of course, we're trying to pass along some healthy advice to people, something practical they can begin to use every day, so that the stress of all these things we hear about in politics isn't, at least making us unhealthy. We have a way to fight all these things. And certainly at the top of the list of things to be concerned about in our health is heart disease, the number one killer. Somewhere along our life, why we're at risk as we get a little bit older for one of these four coronary arteries that supply our heart with blood and oxygen to become blocked, and then it deprives the heart muscle of oxygen, and we have a heart attack, or the same could occur in the brain, and we have a stroke. So those are the two things we're most concerned about. Oddly enough, we find most Americans totally unaware that they can have low cholesterol, no previous symptoms, no more than 60% blockage, or up to 60% blockage of the coronary arteries, which wouldn't deprive the heart or the brain of sufficient oxygen, and yet they could have a sudden mortal heart attack and, of course, a fatal event, and even with normal or low cholesterol. And so tonight we're going to try to explore the reasons for that, and, of course, the obvious answer is something very simple and inexpensive that modern medicine has overlooked.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us about it?
Of course, you know, as we look at Americans, they wake up in the morning and 20 million Americans swallow an aspirin tablet to do this. And that is, regardless of what the blockage is in the coronary arteries, at the end there is some sort of a blood clot. And regardless of the cholesterol, it just blocks it until there is a blood clot. So we take aspirin, 20 million Americans do. The problem is aspirin, up to 40% of people have aspirin resistance, and it isn't even working. We might need to take a booster, another aspirin pill every week, another booster or two, and then we run the risk of overthinning our blood and having a stroke and hemorrhaging. We're at the risk of dying from, of course, ulcers caused by these aspirin. 10% of the people have asthma from this, and a great many people have heartburn and what we call GERD, regurgitation of the stomach acid. So there's so many complications here, and aspirin depletes our body of vitamin C and folic acid. So we never hear this side of the story. I wonder if there isn't an alternative.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bill Sardi talking about some of the very simple things that you can do to protect your health. Things which, it's fascinating to begin looking into it. Every animal, almost the one or two, we'll tell you about that in a moment. This is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bill. Sorry that every animal but one or two, maybe a handful of them, creates their own vitamin C. And, of course, vitamin C is one of the most important of all of the vitamins because it has so much to do with the integrity of our blood vessels and the collagen and the manufacture of collagen and the manufacture of the substance that goes in between the collagen. Vitamin C is essential for the health of the individual, and almost every animal except for guinea pigs and some sort of bats and human beings, half a dozen animals don't produce their own vitamin C. So with that as a background, Bill, why don't you go ahead and tell the story?
Well, certainly as the story goes along, we're trying to keep those four coronary arteries healthy. And, of course, we hear the story about lowering cholesterol. Well, as we said, the problem is not in the donut hole. It's in the donut. And, of course, the circulating cholesterol numbers now, it becomes apparent to us, are almost meaningless. Lowering cholesterol in your blood circulation has only led to 0.4% reduction in the mortality rate. Yet we take these. Only one out of 71 people taking cholesterol-lowering drugs are going to prevent a heart attack, and it will not significantly reduce the overall death rate. So it might prevent a heart attack, but it's certainly not going to prevent a mortal consequence. So this is what we're dealing with now. And, of course, the cholesterol drugs really, despite all the statements to the contrary, there are more side effects than there are any benefits from them. But with all this aside, and possibly in this next year, the recall of many of these cholesterol-lowering drugs, what is going on in the artery wall? Well, certainly if we don't maintain the inside cells on the inside lining of the arteries called endothelium, these are smooth cells, then, of course, the cholesterol can get underneath and begin to slowly occlude or narrow the artery so that it blocks off our circulation. But, again, this is not the major cause of heart attacks as we know it. Now, to go into the history of this, some of this may be repetitious, but today we have a special reason for saying all this, because we have a special online slideshow that we want everyone to view. Unfortunately, it's only available in high-speed internet for right now. I tried to get you to watch it a little earlier, but if you load it on the regular streaming internet, the sound won't coordinate with the slides on it, but you'll be able to see tonight for yourself exactly what we're talking about in visual form as I'm speaking. But
Bill, you're going to have to hold that thought, because we want to bring the rest of our stations back on right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess it's even Bill Sardi, a health journalist. Go ahead and pick up the story, Bill.
Well, certainly we're talking about heart and blood vessel disease, heart attack, the four coronary arteries that we're trying to keep healthy that supply blood to the heart muscles, and, of course, for oxygen and nutrition. And, of course, if those arteries become blocked, usually in the end due to a blood clot, regardless of whether it's cholesterol, plaque in the artery, in the end stage there is some sort of a blood clot, and that's why we take aspirin tablets. I was explaining that aspirin has some side effects, depletes the body of vitamin C and folic acid. 40% of the people are resistant. They don't even work. 10% get asthma from this. A number of people get heartburn, don't even realize it. Some people develop bleeding, gastric ulcers from this, and some even die. Thousands die every year from taking a simple, innocent aspirin pill. If you think your coated baby aspirin works, then we look at the studies and it shows, well, it isn't thinning the blood enough than to prevent the heart attack. And I think the best thing we can do is keep aspirin around, and if we do have some angina, chest pain, then you reach for the aspirin, because our body isn't acclimated to it, and it will work quite well at thinning the blood immediately should you have some sort of blockage in one of those vessels. But the question is how to prevent them in the first place. Modern medicine is implanting 750,000 what we call stents, or supports, little wire supports, in those coronary arteries. Why? Because they collapse over time. And as they collapse, they're floppy. They're losing their collagen content. And, of course, University of North Carolina researchers now pointing out that vitamin C does not lower cholesterol numbers, has nothing to do with the overall cholesterol profiles, but it does support collagen production and prevents something called unstable plaque. And it is unstable plaque, something your audience has probably never heard of. I didn't until a few months ago. Unstable plaque is what is causing most of the drop-dead heart attacks in the United States. Without any warning, without any symptoms, without high cholesterol, you will develop unstable plaque. University of North Carolina researchers say it's a result of not having enough vitamin C. Now, of course, this goes back to a theory that began in 1990 when doctors Matthias Rath and Linus Pauling developed the theory of heart and blood vessel disease, saying that one out of every 17 of our LDL, low-density cholesterol particles, is something called lipoprotein A, and it gets into the artery wall and takes the place of vitamin C, and therefore the vitamin C can't build the collagen, and it weakens the artery walls. And that's exactly now what they're finding is true. And, of course, animals do not have the kind of heart attacks and blood vessel disease we have. They don't have the aneurysms, the weakening and bulges that then cause hemorrhage in the brain or elsewhere in the aorta. And they don't have the peripheral vascular disease that we have, people walking with their feet hurting as they get older, poor circulation in the feet and legs, or what's sometimes called claudication. And they simply don't have these kind of problems. They don't have the hemorrhaging type of strokes because animals make their own vitamin C. It comes as we look at all this now in a perspective looking back. The cardiocoronary heart disease rate in the United States took a sudden plunge in 1970. And the National Institutes of Health last year went before Congress and said, look what we did. We lowered the coronary heart disease rate from 500 to 200 people per 100,000. And they accredited this to their own research done on aspirin therapy, statin cholesterol-lowering drugs, and, of course, the diuretics that brought blood pressure down. And, of course, the problem with this whole story was is that the first cholesterol-lowering drug didn't come on board till 1987. The aspirin therapy wasn't announced by the American Heart Association until 1994, and the diuretics thereafter. So between 1970 and 1987, the coronary heart disease rate dropped from 500 to 250 per 100,000 adults. That means it was cut in half due to nothing that doctors were prescribing. Exactly what was it that caused the sudden plunge? We look back, the Linus Pauling Institute pointing out that Dr. Linus Pauling wrote a book in 1970, Vitamin C and the Common Cold. The consumption of vitamin C went up by 300%. Millions of Americans began popping vitamin C pills. Linus Pauling apparently saved hundreds of thousands of people's lives. But this was withheld from the public view. This is well known. National Institutes of Health certainly has all of this data in front of them. And now it becomes apparent that within 2 years of Linus Pauling and Dr. Rath coming up with this theory for heart and blood vessel disease, the National Institutes of Health fabricated studies to say that vitamin C pills are worthless. If you take more than 200 milligrams, it becomes expensive urine. It's just excreted away. Now their own studies reveal this was false. They didn't calculate for the half-life of vitamin C. It's rapidly excreted from the body. It means if we take it through the day, we will keep high levels in our bloodstream 4 or 5 times a day. If we'll take vitamin C pills, we can reach 3 times higher blood concentration, enough to stop over 500,000 heart attacks that are mortal, fatal heart attacks a year. Of course, we're keeping this information from people. We'd rather treat disease after it occurs, put these little wire stents in, do all the angioplasties and all the other invasive procedures, hire an army of 22,000 cardiologists when we don't need them. None of this is an answer to the disease. My wife's uncle just had a little angina attack. The paramedics came, took him to the hospital. They did a little look in his arteries and said there really wasn't much there, exactly what we're talking about. The cardiologist had the integrity to tell my wife's uncle, the problem is you need more vitamin C. Vitamin C makes the arteries strong so they won't collapse, so you won't have a blockage, so you won't have this unstable plaque that you need the blood thinners for. if you take fish oil, if you take vitamin E, if you take magnesium and garlic pills, all four of those even, you will not overthin your blood. Those are all natural blood thinners. Keep your blood thin because certainly that's your protection all the time, but you don't need to be on these problematic blood thinners, the warfarin, Coumadin, Plavix, and so on, where you could overthin your blood. You have to be tested once a month, and if it overthins your blood, you could have a hemorrhage in the brain and, of course, die. So we need to be thinking about safer ways to do this and, of course, more natural ways. But no one is telling you that there's nothing that can replace vitamin C. It is the way the arteries remain strong. It is a collagenous tissue. Collagen requires vitamin C, along with two amino acids, proline and lysine. Those you'll get just by eating some good proteins in your diet every day. But it's vitamin C that we're lacking. The animals make it. We don't. The animals convert their blood sugar going through their liver. It comes out the other side as vitamin C. We have a genetic flaw. We're missing an enzyme that converts our blood sugar to vitamin C. Just imagine if we still had that going on, why we wouldn't ever have diabetes. Certainly wouldn't have heart and blood vessel disease. Many of the animals, of course, have this protection throughout most of their life, and so we don't see these problems in them. The shocking part of all of this was going down to the pet store and taking a look, because the little guinea pigs are in the same predicament humans are and don't make their own vitamin C, and going down to see exactly what they feed the guinea pigs at the pet store. And there you see on the side of the little bag of guinea pig food, they call it cavy food, is the statement that fortified with vitamin C in order to prevent heart and blood vessel disease in your cavy. Of course, they're doing this for our pets, but they're not doing it for the humans. The little cavies get the equivalent of 800 milligrams of a human dose of vitamin C, a little one-pound animal, and we get no more than 90 milligrams is the recommended dietary allowance, and they tell us we can't get any more than 200 as of any benefit in our blood system. That beyond that, it's excreted away.
Now, how much should we really be taking, Bill?
Well, of course, Dr. Hickey and Roberts, two pharmacologists in Britain, now making us aware that maybe a 500 milligram vitamin C pill 4 or 5 times a day, spread it out through the day, and this will greatly increase our blood levels to the point where many of our risk of stroke and heart attacks, as well as cataracts, allergies, aneurysms, gallbladder stones, hemorrhoids, many of these things will just disappear. And of course, a lot of this is just due to forming good collagen in our bodies. Obviously, as we get a little older, the collagen begins to weaken, so we need more of this, especially in our blood vessels. So, especially where the circulation is not good or where there's extra pressure on our system. So, this is just absolutely critical for all of us to realize. For people that have had a previous heart attack, there are 14 million in the United States, or strokes or other conditions, then even high blood pressure. If you have a strong artery, it won't blow and you won't have hemorrhaging in the brain and a stroke if you have strong arteries. And if you have these kind of conditions that have already occurred, then you may want to take as much as 10,000 milligrams a day, close to what Dr. Linus Pauling was taking every day. And of course, we're walking around. None of us know if we have this unstable plaque. They're developing a technology to diagnose it, detect it, but what good will it do? We don't have any symptoms. How will they know who even to do the tests on? So, and they haven't got an answer for it for a drug. The only thing there is vitamin C.
And so you can take it. It's not going to harm you at all. And you know, if I think if you take some people have a little GI upset, but ordinarily that means you don't need any more. But you tie it down to that level, and up to 2,000 milligrams a day is certainly is a good adequate dose for most people. And really, I think that the studies are showing increasingly that the people who are taking vitamin C are having far fewer problems than the average individual, and for some reason, the government just doesn't want you to know that. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardi. And why don't you pick up the story from there, Bill?
Well, certainly as we're talking about vitamin C, the latest study now, they took 9 vitamin C studies, they pooled them together and looked at the data. What they were able to determine was, even just 750 milligrams of vitamin C, now 5 servings of fruits and vegetables will only get you to about 200 milligrams of vitamin C. So you're going to need some vitamin C supplements in there somewhere. But 750 milligrams of vitamin C or above, people doing that every day reduce their risk of coronary heart disease, the leading cause of death, by 25%. By comparison, the statin cholesterol-lowering drugs only lower the mortality rate by less than 0.5%. Modern medicine has no such pill to lower the mortality rate by so much. You do not hear about this from modern medicine. It is a tragic, tragic thing. Here it was in the newspapers, but it needs clarification and comparison so you understand the impact of it. We have a pill that will dramatically save lives. All we need to do is take some vitamin C. And of course, now we see the government says more than 200 milligrams of vitamin C is worthless. Now Codex is coming along, this worldwide trade body somewhere in July, going to set a limit on vitamins and minerals and try and scare us away with their upper limit. What? To protect us from diarrhea, from vitamin C pills, while people are dying like flies? And of course, this is the terrible thing that's happening. Now, to back up my statements, all of you take a pen and pencil, get it handy here, because there are a couple of free things for you here tonight. You want to find out if any of this is true. Dr. Steve Hickey, Hillary Roberts, University of Manchester graduates in England, writing a book and making it available for the next few days for free. You can find it online or get a friend to print it out for you. It's at a website called lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. And if you want to look for their book, The Ridiculous Dietary Allowance, or if you can't find it there, it's lulu.com/ascorbate, A-S-C-O-R-B-A-T-E, the scientific name for vitamin C. Scroll down. They have 2 books there. You want to go to the second book, Ridiculous Dietary Allowance. You can print it out for free up until the first week of February here. So that's something free for you. Check out the references. See if any of this is true. Share it with your doctors. Second, tonight we've spent thousands of dollars, taken some time, hired a special producer, and we have a special online slideshow. It's 8 minutes for all of you who have high-speed internet connections. You can get this at vitamincproject.com, www.vitamincproject.com. Load it up, hit the flash button there. It takes about a full minute to load because it has audio and video, and watch the slideshow. It shows you everything we're trying to tell you tonight, what the unstable plaque looks like, all of this, all of the evidence, the pictures, the people, the timelines, all of this that we've been talking about, so you can see it in visual form, and then, of course, spread this around the country and the world, share it with others, so they can see that this is for real. And, of course, we've petitioned the Food and Nutrition Board in the United States to, of course, reset the recommended dietary allowance for vitamin C. They've refused. They've been unresponsive. The National Institutes of Health researchers now will no longer respond to emails and other communication, even though their own evidence, they should have written retraction.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. Here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, and he is suggesting that if you have access to the Internet, you go up, first of all, you look at Lulu, and that's lulu.com/ascorbate, and there, of course, you can pick up a book on ascorbic acid. It's published by doctors over in Great Britain who have done extensive studies on that. The second is going online for a slideshow to something called vitamincproject.com. That's vitamincproject.com. And it's an 8-minute slideshow Bill's put together, giving you the background and the documentation on the advantages of vitamin C. It's up there, free of charge for you to pull down if you have to have, but you have to have the line, high-speed lines coming into your house. I tried to pull it down today and weren't able to get it down. Will we be able to get that down later, those of us who
yes,
are outside?
Yes, we're working on a version. The problem is you'll be looking at a slide and the audio will come on 2 slides later.
Right.
So we're trying to work that out for people that have the slower speed, because it's important that you hear the audio with it. And it is interesting that modern medicine would adopt a therapy, aspirin therapy, which now we see here annals of pharmacotherapy just this month showing that 1 in 15 individuals who take aspirin every day will have a complication, and 1 in 556 will die. Now, if that happened with vitamin C, they'd be taking it off the market. So, and of course, we adopt something that over time doesn't work, makes us feel like we're doing something preventive, and then just causes more care to be delivered in the end. And of course, so it's just a masquerade, a charade that we really have any preventive medicine for the number one cause of death in the Western world. So vitamin C is your answer. It's the best thing we have. Fish oil certainly on the list, magnesium to keep the blood thin, keep all this from occurring. So much safer alternatives for you. And of course, we're reminded of the Eskimos, both in the 1930s and the 1970s, who these were the Greenland Eskimos, who were largely free of heart, blood vessel disease, and diabetes, taking as much as 13,000 milligrams of omega-3 fish oils a day. So, you know, keeping the blood thin in a natural way without overdoing it, that's what the fish oils offer us a chance to do. We're just ignoring good data from decades past. Now the government doesn't even have a recommended intake level for essential omega-3 oils, even though they're essential for life. So there's lots of dereliction of duty here as the public's looking for guidance. And of course, when you go buy vitamins today, you'll see on the label there, it'll say 100% of the recommended dietary allowance for vitamin C, which is just 90 milligrams. And it misleads people, or you might read that more than 2,000 milligrams, of course, could possibly be an overdose. The only side effect you could possibly have there would be a little temporary diarrhea, which means you're just taking a little bit much for you. Your need for vitamin C varies by the amount of stress or the health condition and illness you have. So the body just gives you a little sign, you back off the dose. So you hear so much misinformation about vitamin C, that it causes genetic mutations in high doses, which could lead to cancer. That was in the year 2001. This was in Science Magazine. I wrote a letter of rebuttal to that to Science Magazine, and they published it because it was a simple test tube study that showed this, when there were five human studies showing it was false. At the time, the researcher at the University of Pennsylvania, a part of the university there, medical school, which was funded by pharmaceutical companies, came up with this bogus study, and of course never cited the previous research with humans showing it was untrue. So you hear that there's something called rebound scurvy. If you take too much vitamin C and then you back off of it too quickly, you'll induce scurvy. That's totally false. You hear that it depletes the body of vitamin B12. Totally false. You hear that vitamin C can increase the risk of kidney stones. Totally false. So this goes on and on and on. You read this from one doctor to another. It's now become a bunch of wives' tales that doctors tell each other when it's really not true. And, of course, vitamin C is just real simple. The animals make plenty of it. It couldn't be toxic to us. It's certainly not toxic to them. We've lost the ability to do this. Probably humans made more vitamin C before Noah's flood. We see humans live longer then. There was a genetic mutation possibly then. And then we see the human lifespan declining. Maybe the biblical record is a record of humans losing their ability to make vitamin C.
Well, I think what's really so significant, of course, is the drug companies have one desire, for you to buy their drugs. And I hate to sound as if I'm a little paranoid, but, you know, they want to get everybody on the blood pressure medicine. They've simply changed the parameters of what high blood pressure is for older people. They've changed the parameters of what's normal for cholesterol. And everything is designed for one thing, is that you taking their medicines, they make billions of dollars, they bribe the scientists, and we're getting a lot of phony science. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, and we're talking really about the tragedy of what's happened. We have people working at the National Institute of Health who are getting large stipends from the drug companies for various opinions and consultations. Well, you may call it stipends, I would call it bribing, and these people that are coming up with reports that are favorable to the drug companies. And of course many of them go to work for the drug companies if they've done a good job for the drug companies when they've been employed by the federal government. But who's looking after the average American? And the great tragedy is when you turn your back on God, when you turn your back on absolutes, when you turn your back on everything noble and worthwhile, should we be surprised when we end up with a society that is no longer noble or worthwhile or honest, where the lying is simply a matter of course, when people, executives, government executives cheat, where a corporate executive cheat? But of course when we're dealing with the health of the American people, when we have scientists who are coming up with phony stories, reports because they are being paid by the drug companies to write reports favorable to their products. And in fact, that was a story on 60 Minutes last night. I thought that was really rather intriguing. Here was a story that I thought was really quite accurate. I didn't get the entire context of it, but obviously a doctor was being paid a large sum of money that he gave an experimental drug to a patient, and of course it ended up killing the patient, at least destroying her kidney. Let's go ahead. They'll pick up the story from there.
Well, certainly now as we look back at it, as you know, I called you a few days ago to send you a little chart, and it just brought it back in perspective as we look back at this retrospectively now. What was all this about? What was all this phobia about cholesterol? Why were Americans made so phobic? As we know, the cholesterol in our diet now does not have much significant impact on our circulating cholesterol levels. The diet only plays 20% of a role. As we get older, the liver just starts making more cholesterol, actually in an effort to keep us fertile and virile, keep up our hormone levels as they begin to decline. This is testosterone and estrogen in males and females. So the body actually makes our sex hormones from cholesterol. So it brought us to the conclusion, or at least to ask a question, was the effort to lower cholesterol in the human population an effort to lower the population size? You see, I've never seen so many males and females with low testosterone levels, inability to conceive children among the females, and having to go for fertility testing and all this. So
hold that thought for just a minute. We'll bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, and he's simply pointing out the fact that ordinarily the cholesterol in our blood, most of it doesn't come from what we eat. It is manufactured by the liver. The liver manufactures cholesterol, and of course as we get older, why we need more in the way of cholesterol, and of course it's necessary for us, the various hormones, specifically in men, testosterone, progesterone in women. You of course decrease the cholesterol by poisoning the liver, which is what the statin drugs do, and then we wonder why we have so many men with sexual dysfunction and women with sexual dysfunction and so many problems in our society. The purpose of statin drugs is to poison the liver, to cut down on cholesterol production, and that's why they keep lowering the cholesterol level. Oh, when I practiced medicine, 230 was quite normal. Suddenly, if you have a 220 cholesterol, why, you're in danger of death. We've got to get it down below 200. We've got to get it down below 175, and they keep dropping this level all the time. And of course then what about the side effects of this? What does it do to the liver? What does it do to the rest of the body? You pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly the liver, it's malfunctioning when it isn't producing cholesterol. Certainly we need at least a cholesterol level of 160 at the very lowest, because cholesterol carries vitamin E and other antioxidants into tissues around the body. We see an increased risk of cancer as people drop their cholesterol levels below 160. We see an increased risk of mental depression. We see, of course, our testosterone and estrogen go down, and as those go down, we develop depressive syndromes, and then, of course, we're all put on antidepressants without any sense of where it came from. So I see so many people now on antidepressants, and at the same time, They're not virile, they're not fertile, these women, and yet they're being told, drive your cholesterol down. You cannot have babies and be driving your cholesterol down. You need cholesterol to make your hormones. What a terrible thing we've done. You know, it's interesting that eggs are probably the best vitamin pills we ever had. They were the vitamin pills before there were vitamin pills, and we were told that eggs have a lot of cholesterol and therefore we shouldn't eat them. In the decade, there was a 2 to 3 decade period when we were told to stop eating eggs. Americans were eating about 320 eggs a year, almost one a day. It dropped to about 220 eggs a year, about 100 in a year drop. And in that time, the heart and blood vessel disease rose. Cholesterol in the diet has very little to do with the amount of cholesterol that accumulates. And as we eat cholesterol in our diet, the liver dials down and produces less cholesterol itself. So it's a self-regulating function. So, see, the body knows what it needs. And of course, it's regulating this in order to regulate our hormone levels.
Okay.
And we're just not told.
Okay, the program I was mentioning was ER. It was just on last night, and the doctor was being paid to use an experimental drug on the patient, and of course kept saying it was doing a wonderful job when it really wasn't. Right now, let's go to John, who's calling from Post Falls, Idaho. Hi, John. Did you have a question for our guest this evening?
Yes. Good evening, gentlemen. Just wanted to check in with a bit of godly encouragement and pose a provocative philosophical question. We got our first order of Longevinex today, and while it's too early to report results, I immediately thought of Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw, who have been a voice in the wilderness for decades, saying that you can have the best oxygen-sensitive supplement or nutrient in the world, but if it's not properly packaged, it's at best useless. In the case of lipids, it's downright harmful. And I've spent hours doing my homework on resveratrol in general and Longevinex in particular, and having seen the unique way the product is packaged, Bill, I think that you and Dr. Sinclair and Purity have got it exactly right. And so tremendous kudos on a really exciting product.
Well, I'd be interested if you keep us notified as to how you're doing with the product.
I shall do so. But as to my question, I'm an avid life extensionist, but infinitely more important than that is
all Christians should be. After all, we're interested in immortality. God promised it to us, and by the way, God originally programmed us to live for hundreds of years. Go on, please.
Yeah, you're getting right to the nut of it, right? I appreciate that, because it's my testimony that Jesus saved me, and he will rescue anybody who will merely accept his gift of salvation for a glorious future beyond anything we might experience in the flesh. But it seems that more and more, Bill, as I try to share what little I know about life extension, I'm accused of being a closet transhumanist. Are you familiar with that term?
Yes, I am. They even have a website. Yes. And,
so
you know, there are people on the earth that believe they can produce physically immortality. And, you know, we don't know where we're going with this, but certainly we're not there anywhere near that yet. But it becomes interesting.
All right, anything else, John?
Well, yeah, I got to thinking that it's really a lot like money, and there are a lot of verses in the Bible about the parable of the talents and so forth, and I think of St. Paul, who says to live is Christ, but to die is gain, and also to finish well, to run good the race. And it's not good that we're putting all this money in the ungodly sick care system and all these heroic measures to preserve a very low quality of life when you can do just... The answers are in the Bible.
Well, the best thing to do is stay healthy so you don't get to that situation.
Amen.
Bye-bye, and thanks so
Bye-bye.
Much, John. Okay, Bill, we'll pick a story up from there. And certainly vitamin C should be taken really up to a couple of thousand milligrams a day. And the people who do that, I know many of them, and they really seem to live longer, they seem to be healthier, they seem to have fewer of the multiple complications, joint-wise, collagen-wise, tissue-wise, heart-wise, stroke-wise. So anyway, you're advocating that people to increase their vitamin C, that we're not being told the truth. In fact, everything is really being done to give us the wrong information as to the recommended amount. What's the basis of the recommendation is if you take 90 milligrams a day, you're going to have all these problems. You need a lot more than that.
Well, we certainly do. And remember, God programmed us probably to make a lot more. There was a genetic defect. We just don't make it anymore. It's a hormone. It's just We just don't make it anymore. It's really not so much a vitamin. We got used to it that it only comes from the diet. The human body used to make it as a hormone. So, you know, we have a new baby here at home, a 7-month-old baby. We're giving him 20 milligrams of vitamin C per pound. So he gets over 400 milligrams of vitamin C a day, which is equivalent in a full-grown human to 4,000 to 6,000 milligrams a day. Now, he's teething, so he started to salivate a little more, and then he got a little runny nose here, but there's no infection whatsoever. He's just having a little histamine release, and he's just getting right on through it. The teething is not bothering him. If you have young children, begin giving them vitamin C. They'll grow their bodies just like they're rock hard with the collagen building they need. And, of course, a little bit of fish oil, so their brain and nervous system will work well, a little cod liver oil like we do with our baby. And, you know, my wife, at age 45, had a natural childbirth, no anesthesia. And the moment our child was born, why, he was blinking and sneezing and looking around the room, unlike a child that's a newborn. He was very aware. And, of course, people were remarking, the doctor was remarking that he'd never seen such a thing. And, of course, my wife was given super nutrition, lots of vitamin C and the fish oil during pregnancy. And we've had a super developed baby. And, of course, it was a Dr. Frederick Klenner in North Carolina said, if you can make super babies, he called them, give them vitamin C. He even showed that at the time they didn't have a cure for polio many years ago, and he used high-dose vitamin C and cured polio. So we just have not been told all the story about this. And it's a strong antiviral substance. It's very good against histamine and allergy, and its uses go on and on. We're just genetically flawed. We don't make it like we once did. The Bible was correct. People were probably living hundreds of years. They probably made their own vitamin C then. It was after the flood. There was inbreeding. There were only 8 people left on the planet, all of Noah's family, and thereafter the human lifespan dropped from 900 to 600, 400, and so on. And, of course, that's the sign of a progressive gene mutation. We were probably programmed to live for hundreds of years. It's the way God probably created us. And, of course, the previous caller talked about a little pill called Longevinix. I played a role in developing it. It's a little red wine pill. In the past, the Bible talked about wine in moderation. Wine had a molecule called resveratrol that turns on gene switches for survival and for us to live longer and healthier. We see all the ancient cultures of the world, Mesopotamia, Greece, and Egypt, had these little amphora jars to make wine, and the wine had to be preserved or it would turn to vinegar, and they made airtight containers for this even at that time. They had technology to do this, and that's what we've done. We put the red wine molecules in an airtight capsule, preserve them for the first time. Researchers at Harvard now saying it's the only red wine pill to show the same activity that they duplicated in the laboratory with research-grade resveratrol, turns on a gene switch for survival, could replace virtually every known medication. I know I talked to so many people that are on 7, 8, 9 medications. Theoretically, red wine molecules, if they're biologically active and preserved, without calories, without the sugars and the alcohol and preservatives, Longevinix, a little red wine pill, can provide all this to us in a biologically active state and could replace, theoretically, pills used for diabetes, for hypertension, cholesterol, even antibiotics, all of the pills that we take today, all in one. Red wine pills, that's what the medicine was of the Bible times. Noah, the first thing he did when he got off the ark after the flood was to build a little monument for God there, and then the second thing he did was to plant a vineyard. So it was the medicine of the day, and of course, we just have failed to read our Bible carefully. And wine was medicine in the past. The wine of old had more of these molecules in it. For various reasons, the weather and so on, and the earth was more moist, and the grapes made more of these molecules. So maybe it had this effect. Maybe another reason why the patriarchs of the Bible lived so long in the past is that they drank wine that had more of these same kind of molecules. Of course, they were advised to to stay away from over-consumption, and that's why we're careful about telling people to drink wine, because man is flawed. He'll use it as an excuse to over-consume. The Bible warns against this. So we have an option available to us, a little pill called Longevinix. I was pleased to have played a role in developing it. For people who want to know more about it, 866-405-4000, 866-405-4000, or you can go to the website, check out the information, longevinex.com, longevinex.com.
Well, you know, I think one of the interesting things is the fact that this seems to be a mediator for so many of the other genes. In other words, this gene in resveratrol actually will turn on or turn off genes that control so many other bodily functions. That's something really sort of exciting and new, isn't it?
Well, we're entering something called nutrigenomics. It's an era where we now realize we don't need drugs, we need nutrients, and we realize they can switch genes on and off. What we want to do is switch on off all the bad ones and switch on all the good ones. Well, resveratrol in red wine has the ability to do this, so much so that the people who lived longest in modern times, up to 122 years, were wine drinkers. They were not taking vitamins. They were not eating great diets. They were not exercising. They were just getting these red wine molecules. It's that powerful. It even overcame the negative effects of the alcohol in the wine. So you can see there's some very powerful molecules there. And so we're just finding out about these things. You know, taking this red wine pill, you have a profound mental alertness. Men have tremendous prostate health, I can't tell you, and prostate problems virtually disappear. And circulation, it's unbelievable. Men will have a Viagra effect they can't even believe. And this is true. The older you are, even the more effect you get. And it seems to have a tremendous brain-clearing effect, especially after 3 months, or we even heard from a man today who's been taking it all the time since it was first available. And he says after 1 year, it really has tremendous benefits. You just stay with it. And, of course, we've had so many wonderful reports on health problems clearing up. We can only make the claim it's good for your health. We can't make a claim that it prevents or treats disease. But we can tell you that many people are giving us reports back. This is just something that is highly unusual. They're certainly pleased, and we'd like you to know about it. That's Longevinex. It's a little red wine pill without the calories, without the alcohol, and it's, of course, a little red wine pill, all preserved in an airtight capsule. Longevinex, or longevinex.com if you want to look it up on the Internet.
Well, I know I've taken it, I think, since you first put it on the market, and I will tell you, I think it's had a profound effect on me, and in fact, our whole family takes it. In fact, my understanding is that all the people back there at Harvard working in the laboratory where this product was originally developed, and I'm speaking now of the research on resveratrol, they're actually taking your Longevinex capsules, aren't they?
The entire Harvard laboratory is taking this pill, but they're not allowed to say anything about it because Harvard wants to make a drug out of it, so they've hushed them all up. The head professor there, Dr. Sinclair, gave it to his father in Australia, who, as I say, used to have, diabetes. He no longer has it anymore. And we've seen profound reports like this. We've actually had a number of physicians. This year's Nobel Prize winner in physics takes this pill and so on. A lot of smart people have caught up with the story. And, of course, it's been a lot of fun talking with these people. And lots of research underway now. They're trying to actually win a Nobel Prize with us. We have nothing to do with it, but researchers are racing to show that this might be an anti-aging pill, and if it's true and it's proven in humans, then, of course, someone would win the Nobel Prize. So lots of eager research going on, lots of study. If you're looking it up, the word resveratrol is the molecule, R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, and that's the magical red wine molecule provided to us by God, mostly provided in grapes, but more so in fermented grapes. You can't find it in grape juice, which is pasteurized. Fresh grapes provide very little. It needs to be extracted out by the alcohol or the fermentation process in wine, or then the alcohol dissipated and put into a pill, or you can get it without any of the other little undesirable properties. And, of course, that pill, first one to be proven to work, is Longevinex, and you can find out more about it. 866-405-4000 for a phone number.
But I think the interesting thing is that you can have resveratrol, but if it once it gets exposed to oxygen for any period of time, it becomes inactivated. And so what you've done is you've actually put this into a capsule where it's in a nitrogen atmosphere where there is no exposure to oxygen, and for that reason it works, whereas the other ones really don't work. And hasn't that actually been demonstrated in the laboratory by checking them all?
Yes, that the Harvard did this, and what they showed was the other red wine pills just simply didn't show any of this activity. Of course, it's just for smart people to check up on this, check the story out, and make sure you're getting what, of course, you're paying.
And that's, of course, 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program with Bill Sardi here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening, Bill Sardi, is a health journalist who certainly supports Radio Liberty and helps us as we try to reach out across America with the information you're not going to get from so many other sources. Well, Bill, of course, you're talking to a lot of these people. Aren't they doing a study with this group, this calorie restriction group, doing some studies on their own to see the impact?
That's right. That's right. The Calorie Restriction Society, not a popular society, only 1,600 people willing to restrict their calories in order to live longer. And this pill, the red wine pill, is supposed to mimic that effect. So these people took up the cause and said, maybe we don't have to deprive ourselves of so much food. And so they actually began using this red wine pill, Longevinex, and finding it works better than their own calorie restriction. So some of them are starting to abandon, eat more calories, and not to deprive themselves of so much food as they realize the pill works better than what they were doing. That's the whole idea. Any animal, insect, doesn't matter, deprive it of calories, it'll live far longer and healthier. And now we find that same effect possibly duplicated in this red wine pill.
And so what are they doing? Running some sort of a study and then checking on their...
Yes, that's what they're doing. What they're trying to show is, it's been said, you'd win a Nobel Prize if you could show the effects of calorie restriction can be transferred in a molecular mimic to humans. So they're trying to show that you can test the blood and see that the little proteins or enzymes that are produced by this sirtuin-1 survival gene are upregulated after you take this pill. If they can prove that, and they're doing it in a small group of people right now, if that's proven and published, you have maybe the greatest discovery of all time, an anti-aging pill. We would have very little to do with this. It's out of our hands. These people, of course, racing ahead, trying to prove that this is true and maybe benefit for all humanity as they try to do it. And it looks very positive at the moment. I've never seen so many positive health benefits from a singular dietary supplement as this one. It's been profound among the people that are taking it. We've had some things that I even hesitate to say, including cancer remissions, but you can't prove those until people live for 5 years and so on, so we're a little hesitant about that. But nonetheless, these things have been reported, and we're trying to make people aware of this tremendous possibility of a natural molecule possibly being, well, the fountain of youth that of course, everyone has hoped for over the years.
Ponce de Leon. Well, certainly it's an exciting thing as I look over your shoulder and see this story unfolding. The drug companies are trying to figure out a way to modify it so they can patent it, but they really can't because this is what God made. Thanks so much, Bill.
Good night now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardi, and we always enjoy having Bill with us. And I always learn a great deal because he's on the cutting edge, and it's amazing how he really was able to, of course, beat Dr. David Sinclair back at Harvard. And initially, Dr. Sinclair was involved very deeply with this. But, of course, Harvard wants to modify the molecule somehow so they can patent it themselves. But, of course, you don't have to patent something. God made it perfectly. me to begin with, and that's really what the product is. But they're trying to figure another way around this so that they can get a patent on it. But they'll have to change it, and will they improve it by changing it? Certainly there's no evidence they're going to improve it any more than they improved the COX-2 inhibitors over the old standard aspirin and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medication. The only trouble was when they manufactured the new product, Vioxx and Celebrex, well, it's estimated that 140,000 people have died or will die unnecessarily because of heart attack and strokes because they began to modify the original molecular structure. And now, of course, it's too late. Nothing can be done about it, and there's going to be very, very real problems. A direct result of complicity on the part of the Federal Drug Administration officials, and having known for 5 years what was going to that there was a danger. And, of course, Dr. David Graham, who came forward and told the truth about this terrible miscarriage of justice and endangering the health of the people. Well, David Graham has been punished severely. He's lost his career. They've demonized him and attacking him. They've taken him out of his regular position. Why? Because he told the truth. Ladies and gentlemen, there really are people working in government that are not there to further your health. Well, you really need to learn so much more about what's really going on health-wise. We have a wonderful book. It's called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Russell Blaylock. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life by Dr. Russell Blaylock. And we also carry his books, Natural Strategies for Cancer Patients, and his book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, and Exposea, the NutraSweet, which the FDA are now allowed to be put into so many food products, knowing full well it produced brain tumors, it produced convulsions, it had a tendency to create morbid obesity, so you drank it and or ate it and you couldn't lose weight, and tumors, and, the story goes on and on. You can thank the FDA, your government officials, for releasing that and lying to the American people, and they're still lying about it. Russell Blaylock's book, Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills, has been around for 10 years, but it's one of the standards on this subject. We have a 4-tape set with Dr. Blaylock, Life-Saving Health Secrets. So his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, my 4-tape set with him, Life-Saving Health Secrets. You want to get that information. And, of course, the book has so much in it on fluoride, which is poisoning our children, and NutraSweet, which is poisoning our children, and mercury, which is poisoning our children. You really need to get the information. You need to help us get the information out across America. Remember, we have a 4-tape set on mercury and a video on mercury. And we have a 4-tape set on aspartame, and we have a video on aspartame and several books. We have a 4-tape set on fluoride and several books on fluoride, including The Fluoride Deception by Chris Bryson. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. People say, why would anybody working in government or the drug companies want to come up with drugs that are harmful to people? And let me simply point out, some people will say it's for money, and I'm sure that is a motive, but there's also another motive. If you haven't heard our 4-tape set or seen my video on population control, if you haven't read what Jacques Cousteau said about the necessity of killing or eliminating 350,000 people a day. If you'd like that quotation from UNESCO Courier back in 1991, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the article on Jacques Cousteau. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you. good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming here from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Well, for this hour, we're going to have with us John Spring. And John has his own radio program in Southern California. He's a geographer. And, of course, he studied geography and geopolitics for many years. He's had wide experience, has contacts throughout the world. And certainly, always a pleasure to have John Spring with us here on Radio Liberty as we discuss what's going on in the world, what's going on in the Middle East, the stories that you're not going to hear from the conservative or the liberal commentators, the information that there are people that you really don't want you to get. John, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's a pleasure, and I would encourage everyone to support your program and your ministry because you are able to reach out to many more people than even I am with my one radio broadcast, so I think it's so important that they support your program.
Well, I really feel very, very blessed to have the outreach that we do. And certainly that first hour probably hits 15 stations. The second hour hits probably close to 10 stations across America, plus two short waves and two internets. So people are out there. They're getting an education. They're learning. Now, this evening, really wanted to begin talking about the Middle East. And we're told there's going to be an election in Iraq the election will be a couple of days from now.
Yes.
Oh, this wonderful election. Why, now we're going to have democracy in Iraq, and our boys can come home. The only trouble is, why, of course, there's no intention of bringing our boys home. The president said, if the Iraq government will ask us to leave, we will leave. But does anybody really believe we're building 13 or 14 major new bases over there so that we can immediately come home? We're building the largest embassy anywhere in the world in Iraq, and we're really planning on coming home. We've gone in there specifically to destabilize that tragic nation, first of all by dissolving the military, and then by dissolving the police force, and then by destroying the structure of government, because some of them had been members of, many of them had been members of the Ba'athist Party, and then, of course, by firing everybody who knew how to make the electric system work, who knew how to make the sewage system work and the water system work, and then, of course, we wonder why we have chaos there. Of course, we have terrorists there. There's no question. Who's funding them? Why, the money's obviously coming elsewhere. I mean, you have to have money if you're going to be a terrorist. And we know that Saudi Arabia has been funding terrorism. It's been funding terrorism for a long time. In fact, it funded the terrorists who attacked us, 9/11. But we've always worked very closely with the Saudis. We've helped to create the finest enemies money could buy. We're antagonizing the entire Islamic world. And some of the stories that are coming out, stories today, and if you can look these up, about how they're having women interrogators interrogate the prisoners at Guantanamo, embarrass them sexually. And, of course, these are things that will design specifically to inflame the entire Islamic world. Releasing those pictures from the Abu Ghraib prison, the Defense Department could have kept a lid on those pictures. Instead, they released them. Why? To inflame the Islamic world. Why? Because they want a major war. If you don't believe that, you need to read Samuel Huntington's book, The Clash of Civilizations, and realize we're doing everything Samuel Huntington said don't do. Because he said if you do what these things, why, you're going to end up mobilizing the entire Muslim world against you. And you know what we're doing? We're doing just what he cautioned us not to do. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is John Spring. John, go ahead and pick up the story from there.
Well, Dr. Stan, you have brought up some very interesting points already about Iraq, and I think we should spend a few moments focusing on this nation which we are currently occupying, or at least the multinational forces, which are mainly U.S. troops, are occupying the nation of Iraq, which essentially is divided up into three cultural areas. The Kurds to the north, the Kurdish people, throughout a good share of Iraq, but predominantly in the southeast region, we have a very strong Shia or the Shiites, and then we have the Sunni Muslims throughout the central portion of Iraq, mainly around the cosmopolitan areas that were rewarded so well financially by Saddam Hussein, who himself was Sunni and gave partial preference to the Sunni peoples throughout Iraq. And as you pointed out, there is a considerable amount of aid that has come from very well-to-do families in Saudi Arabia in terms of supporting terrorism. But there is another area that we have perhaps overlooked in terms of the war on terrorism, and that is the People's Republic of China apparently played a role in orchestrating Al-Qaeda, supporting Osama bin Laden, whom they're still supporting and giving comfort to even today. And for some reason, we in the West are not as well informed as we should be about the various sponsoring nations. And to that list of nations, I would even add Russia, which through Yevgeny Primakov met with Saddam Hussein just about 2 months before we invaded, or 2 weeks, I should say, before we invaded Iraq. And for some reason, we're a little naive about this whole situation, but because we have a former national security advisor who's now the Secretary of State for the Bush administration, Dr. Condoleezza Rice, who has established very close ties with Moscow and the nations of Central Asia, we somehow do not understand the geopolitical aspects of what is going on behind the scenes. We are unaware, for example, that Dr. Condoleezza Rice is also a member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Hold that thought right there, John. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring. And John is saying that certainly agreeing that the Saudi, certain families in Saudi Arabia are financing terrorism. They've been financing it for a long time. They were financing the terrorists who struck here in on September 11th. They're financing the terrorists now. But he's also pointing out that the Russians and certainly the Chinese communists, both the Chinese communists and the Russian communists, and don't think for 1 minute that Putin is not a communist. He's always been a communist. His father, or I guess it was his grandfather, was part of the original Soviet secret police. His family's been in the secret police all along, and he came from the KGB, was a colonel in the KGB. This is Putin. So both the Chinese communists and the Russian communists have been working with the terrorists, but they don't want the American people to know that. In fact, what was really so very interesting, this whole issue of the weapons of mass destruction, Saddam really did have weapons of mass destruction. They were moved out of the country immediately before the attack and sent to Syria and perhaps some to Iran, and they're actually moving them was helped by the Russians, and there was a high government official working in the Defense Department who came forward and admitted that the Russians had helped the Iraqis move the weapons of mass destruction out of their country. And within the last couple of weeks, he's been fired. Why? Because he went to the public and let them know the Russians were helping the Iraqis. Now, why would our government be so intent upon wanting to cover up the communist involvement, the Russian involvement with Iraq, just as they want to cover up the Chinese communist involvement with Osama bin Laden and the terrorists? You pick up the story there, John. There are a lot of unanswered questions, and nobody wants to ask why.
Yes. Well, Dr. Stan, first of all, as I was alluding to, Dr. Condoleezza Rice, she recently made a statement that, quote, Russia is our closest ally. Now, I didn't know that, but she decided to inform us of that. I guess I've been rather naive, and I realize I'm saying that in a rather facetious manner, but she would have us believe that Russia is our closest ally, and therefore, if we establish closer connections with Russia, we must be doing the right thing. And in reality, this was the whole plan that was put in place prior to 9/11, with the Bush administration, within the Pentagon, within the National Security Agency, and Moscow. This was coordinated with also leaders of Central Asia, and as a result, we moved into Afghanistan and Iraq. But before that occurred, we were somehow in a very perverse or diabolical way cursed with a terrorist operation on 9/11/01, and that provided the ideal excuse to carry out the operations against Afghanistan and later against Iraq, being coordinated in the case of Afghanistan with the Russians and former communists of the Northern Alliance, people like Dostum, who fought with the Soviet forces until almost the very end of the Afghan War. And then we have also...
this man was fighting with the communists until the end of the Afghan War. Now he's suddenly our ally, is what you're saying.
Yes, and of course, General Muhammad Fahim, who was one of the communists who was responsible for the communist coup of the duly elected and constitutional government in Kabul, Afghanistan, prior to 1978, but he and several other thugs overthrew the legitimate government, and all of the government officials had to flee with their lives and get their families out as fast as they could, otherwise they would have been killed and executed and murdered. But for some reason, Fahim is one of our closest confidants now. In fact, in reality, although Hamid Karzai was elected as the new president of Afghanistan, in reality, General Fahim, who's now Minister of Defense, with his own private army, controls that nation's policy.
And I really think that what you're saying is so important. There, we spent the whole 1980s financing the Mujahideen,
yep,
financing the rebirth of radical Islam, financing Osama bin Laden, fighting Fahim and the communists, and now that we are victorious, who have we allowed to have the key position, the most powerful position in Afghanistan? Well, Karzai is simply a figurehead. Fahim, the communist, the long-term communist supporter, the man we fought for 10 years, is really the man of power in Afghanistan, but you're never going to hear that from Rush Limbaugh or Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity, or certainly from any of the other commentators out there who are so intent upon misleading the American people, so we can't really see what's going on.
Yes, and today within Afghanistan, practically every province is now producing the opium poppy, a poppy that was once confined to just one small region and very tightly controlled by the Afghan government, and the limitation, I think, was only 12 tons, and most of that was shipped to the former Soviet Union. But today it's prevalent throughout practically every province. The people are starving because they don't have enough staple crops for sustenance, and as a result, the economy is plundering, the people are malnourished, but who cares? As long as we have a friend in Kabul, and as long as the pipeline proposed along western Afghanistan goes through as scheduled, even if it means, as Dr. Rice attempted to do several years back when she attempted to vilify Ismail Khan, the governor of Herat, and yet very few people realize that Ismail Khan was one of the heroes, the legitimate heroes of the Mujahideen. He was captured by the Soviets, was able to escape. Later on, He fought against the Taliban, was imprisoned again, was miraculously able to escape. And when the United States did not give him any support, he did accept support from his neighbors to the west, who are the Iranians. So Tehran established fairly good relations with him, but he is still loyal to Afghanistan. He is not out to sell out his nation in any way, but what you read in the newspapers, you would think he was the most reactionary drug warlord in all of Afghanistan, the way he's been vilified.
Well, I think it's so interesting that when the wicked Taliban were in power, why, of course, they shut down the opium trade. Now that the Americans control the country, and we have our troops there every place, why the drug trade, the opium trade, is flourishing. Now, you would think that we have all of these troops over there, they could destroy the opium crop. You would think that when we control the air, when we have our helicopters there, when we have our planes, we can certainly spray those fields and do away with the opium crop. We're told, oh, we can't do that. Why, we destabilize the country, the people, after all, these are our allies, so we let them grow the opium that is being used then to corrupt not only all of Europe and Russia, but also the United States, although primarily Europe and Russia. But certainly there's something wrong with this picture, and nobody ever asked why it is that we defeated the people who were holding down opium production, and we're rewarding the people who are increasing opium production. And if you honestly believe we have all those troops over there and we could do something about the opium crop, why, I think you're incredibly naive.
Absolutely. There's one geographical region of Afghanistan known as the Helmand Valley, H-E-L-M-U-N-D, I believe. And this is an area where they still need to practice dry farming because the rainfall is not adequate, or the precipitation is not adequate throughout the entire year. But if irrigation were introduced to this region, they could produce crops for about 60% of the entire nation of Afghanistan. But this is the region where the most intensified growing of the cash crops of the opium poppy are taking place. And they will continue to take place there because businessmen from Pakistan will pay the farmers a little bit of seed money, so to speak, and then when they return after the harvest, they will pay them the balance. And the farmers in that region are just solely dependent upon this indebtedness to these Pakistani businessmen. But for some reason, we are naive enough to believe that this situation cannot be solved. The people would actually, if they did farm other cash crops such as vegetables and grains, would profit considerably more than they are now, but for some reason our government and other governments throughout the world don't seemingly care if the Afghans starve to death or not.
Well, we've got a tragic situation over there. We're doing everything wrong. American boys are dying in Afghanistan. They're dying in Iraq. They're coming home without their arms and without their legs. And then, of course, we have probably at least 20,000 more that have these bizarre illnesses, very, very similar to the Gulf War illness. In fact, I think it's exactly the same product. I think it's being produced by the same experimental vaccine that has destroyed the lives of somewhere between a third and a half of the Gulf War I veterans, and we've continued giving a vaccine that we know creates all these terrible problems and chronic disability, and it's destroying the lives of our young men. Why would we do something like that? So foolish, so stupid, unintentionally. And I'd like to suggest that there are those who know exactly what they're doing. Do you know a better way to destroy a great nation than destroy its youth, to destroy its army, to destroy the loyalty of its citizens? We'll be back in just a moment here with John Spring. We'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, John Spring. John, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, we should get back to Iraq and mention that there are tragic things that are occurring within that nation and things that are supposedly overlooked. Now, when I had Joseph Badanski, or Yosef Badanski, as a guest on my program several months ago, one thing that I referred to that was mentioned in his latest book was that Saddam Hussein was very concerned that after the first war with the West, which was Operation Desert Storm, that many of his underground bunkers and tunnel systems were inadequate. So in 1995, he commissioned Chinese technicians and North Korean technicians to dig an entirely new system. And based on the technology that has been utilized by the North Koreans, it is not out of the realm of possibility that such bunkers and tunnels could have been dug or excavated to a depth of nearly 2,000 meters. Now, that's more than a mile. And for some reason, even though we have occupied Iraq, I believe, for over almost 2 years now, just about, this coming March, March 19th, that'll be 2 years, we have not found any trace or clue of any of these entrances. Now, earlier we talked about weapons of mass destruction being moved out of Syria. I mean, out of Iraq into neighboring Syria to the west. But if indeed such bunkers were constructed by the North Koreans and Chinese, all of whom left so there would be no one to tell any fellow Iraqis where these are, but if indeed these tunnels did become functional and the bunkers did become functional for storing weapons of mass destruction or other weapons for combative purposes, we may have underestimated Saddam Hussein's strategy. Because in retrospect, I felt that he gave very little resistance to the Americans and the other multinational forces invading Iraq. I thought his forces would have resisted far more intensely. But I think he may have built up a strategy whereby, with the use of these bunkers, he has munitions stored and well hidden from the multinational forces currently occupying Iraq. And I think he plans, with the aid of outside help from the Arab and other Islamic states, to keep perpetuating his warfare. And I think he's confident, even though he's a prisoner himself and ready to be tried as a criminal, that he's rather confident that eventually he and his forces will win. And in all probability, they may, because in nearly 2 years, we have not even found a clue as to where the entrances to these tunnel bunker systems are situated. And they do exist. We know that.
Well, there are many imponderables that really would sort of defy your imagination, things that are going on. The close relationship, say, between the Chinese communists and the Osama bin Laden, never mentioned here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. In fact, it's a fascinating book. I've just started reading. It's called Seeds of Fire by Gordon Thomas. You've actually talked to Gordon, haven't you? This is a well-known British author. It certainly has fantastic access to information you won't get elsewhere. Would you like to talk a little bit about what you learned from Gordon Thomas in your interviews with him and reading his book, Seeds of Fire?
Yes. He was one of the most interesting guests that I have ever had on Sound Off. That's the name of our radio program, which airs every Sunday here on the West Coast at 4 p.m. on KSPA in the Southern California area, which is 1510 on the AM dial. And by the way, we're also on the internet at www.crusaderadio.com.
Give that one more time.
Okay, that's crusaderadio.com.
And that's every Sunday at 4 o'clock in the evening.
Every Sunday at 4 in the afternoon.
Right, go ahead.
Pacific Standard Time. Now, I had several telephone conversations with Gordon Thomas before we recorded the interview for the radio program. And we talked about many areas which are pointed out in his book. He dealt a great deal with intelligence information, which was mind-boggling. I also had an opportunity to have or conduct personal interviews with some of those people that he alluded to, but they are not willing at this time to go on the air. But in terms of the computer software programs that were developed and how they fell into the hands of the Israelis and eventually into the hands of the communist Chinese agents, and how they were able to retrieve very highly sensitive information from White Sands, New Mexico, and that's just one aspect. And then he spoke about Tiananmen Square, which I must confess, Dr. Stan, I was completely left out in the dark about. I had no idea how many people throughout China, how many students throughout China died and were imprisoned after the so-called Tiananmen Square incident, which actually was going on throughout practically every region of China at that time. And he mentioned other things. For example, in our conversations, I mentioned to him something about the Chinese mentality, which very few people in the West seemingly understand. And it goes back to our erroneous bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, Serbia, or Yugoslavia by NATO aircraft, mainly U.S. aircraft. And even though that was determined to be an accident, and the Chinese agents who investigated came to that same conclusion, the official rationale of the government of the People's Republic of China could not accept that, and so other things were in the works. And, of course, the one that we're all aware of was the forced landing of the EP-3 aircraft on Hainan Island.
And what you're saying is that maybe there have been a reprisal for our bombing their embassy in Belgrade and killing their people, right?
Yes.
We've got Tim calling from Austin. We'll pick this up in just a minute, but Tim's been waiting patiently on the line. Tim, does he have a question or comment?
Yes, I'm not very well versed in world affairs, but I've kind of bounced around the planet over my 48 years and met a few people here and there. One was a Hungarian helicopter pilot for the Russian Air Force, and he said he used to fly escort for heavy aircraft that were flying opium out of Afghanistan before he defected over the Berlin Wall in a Russian helicopter back in the 80s. Another one was a Force Recon Marine who said he was working down in Colombia through the CIA, and they were dropping white phosphorus grenades down the ventilation shafts and underground cocaine mines. But only the ones that that didn't pay off.
In other words, we had some we favored and supported, and
right.
We got rid of the competition. Right.
Right. And now I'm wondering what role the CIA has or what influence they have in the opium trade in Afghanistan.
All right. Do you have any thoughts on that at all, John? What role does the CIA have in the opium trade in Afghanistan?
I honestly don't know what role the CIA has, but I'm more concerned of the role that the DIA might have. That's the Defense Intelligence Agency of the Pentagon. And the thing about the DIA is they can work under entire complete secrecy without the additional communication of other agencies, as is more or less required to by the CIA.
In other words, I think that the Tim, the CIA is at least theoretically supposed to report to Congress. The defense intelligence agencies, the other intelligence agencies, don't, and they all work together, and they've been involved in drugs going back long before Vietnam. And if you doubt that, why, of course, you need to read the book that we have, Into the Buzzsaw, a four tape set on Is There Really a War on Drugs? There's no war on drugs. That war is really upon the American people.
Right. No, I agree with you there.
Okay.
I agree with you.
If you want to hang on, you can. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Spring, who has his own program in Southern California every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Tim, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Not this time. I appreciate the information, though.
All right, fine. But tragically, what most Americans find it difficult to believe is that there is a dark element within our government that was involved in drug smuggling. We have a book called Drugging America. We have another book called Defrauding America, where Rodney Sitz has interviewed so many people and positions of government that go into the background of drug smuggling. I know when I interviewed Monica Jensen Stevenson, who wrote the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye, she was married to William Stevenson, a very well-known international author who wrote The Man Called Intrepid and a number of other fascinating books. And, of course, William Stevenson thought his wife, Monica Stevenson, was a little crazy, because her thesis of the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye and Why We Abandoned Our Boys in Vietnam had to do with the fact that the CIA was involved in smuggling drugs. And he had somebody from MI6, British Intelligence, over one evening and commented to him, you know, my crazy wife thinks that the CIA is involved in smuggling drugs. And according to Monica, the British Intelligence agent looked at him with amazement and said, why, everybody in the world knows the CIA is the primary drug smuggler in the world. Didn't you know that? And as a result of that conversation, William Stevenson co-wrote the book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, and if you don't have a copy, you'll never get one, because the publisher refused to distribute it, called back the copies that were out there. And then, of course, Monica got the rights to the book back again, the copyright. They moved to Canada, sold it to another publisher. They published it. Somebody came in and bought up the publishing house. And accidentally, I want you to know it's just accidentally, shredded 5,000 copies of the book. So I have my copy. If you have a copy, it'll be a collector's item. Why? Because the last thing they want people to know is the truth. Anything else you wanted to say, Tim?
No, I think that'll do it. Thanks very
much.
Good night.
Let's go to going to Carlos calling from Carson, California. Hi, Carlos. How are you doing?
Good evening. Hi, John.
Hello, Carlos.
Yes, you know, you fellows were alluding to the poppy fields there in Afghanistan and asking the question, why are they still flourishing in spite of our soldiers being over there who could put them out in a minute? And I think that my opinion that we have to understand that behind the scenes there are certain very powerful families, very wealthy families, who historically and whose these families are, of course,
Carlos,
behind the scenes.
Carlos, hold that thought. We got to go to a break here. And we'll be... Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon, or this evening, is John Spring. And, of course, we have Carlos calling us from Carson, California. And Carlos was commenting that he thinks that the reason that the American troops, which control Afghanistan today, are not doing anything about the poppy fields that are flourishing there, now that we've, of course, done away with the wicked Taliban who kept the poppies down and restricted poppy growth. Now that Afghanistan is free, why, of course, the opium crop is booming, and we refuse to do anything about it. And Carlos was saying he feels that there have always been American families that have been involved in the drug trade. Is that accurate, Carlos?
Yes. Well, some of them are historically British. Some of these families used to export opium through the British East India Company to China, and also India, some very powerful families who have controlled our government, who have influenced our government and many governments of the world, and have used the CIA, have used countries like Russia, China, the Saudi royal family to finance terrorism. They're that powerful. And these families are still in the drug business. There's a book called Doping Incorporated, written by Linda LaRouche, who very explicitly described the worldwide drug trafficking network. And these very powerful families and banking institutions are the core of the drug trade throughout the world.
So all right, John, would you like to comment on what Carlos is saying?
Well, I think Carlos is absolutely right. This has been an ongoing thing for several centuries, actually, before there even was a CIA, but the CIA has more or less, in part, taken on that role, which is unfortunate because supposedly they are an intelligence gathering agency, and they should be competent to analyze information accurately. But I will say this, based on my 40 years of experience, all American intelligence agencies have blundered in practically every major situation that has threatened America. It has only been through outside sources, rather than the so-called professional intelligence gathering agencies throughout Washington, that America is still somewhat of a free nation today, or intact, for that matter. It's tragic that names become meaningless. It is called the CIA, which means Central Intelligence Agency, but that is not the role that it has, any more than the so-called Federal Reserve is either federal or a reserve. It's a fraud, basically, and we need to become informed of these dilemmas in Washington, and unfortunately, time is running out. We don't have the luxury of a considerable amount of time to become informed on these issues, just as, for example, Congress right now is preparing to vote for CAFTA or the FTAA, the Free Trade Area for the Americas. Once this comes about, we're going to lose our sovereignty as a nation, but very few people are aware that practically every congressman throughout America is has pledged already to support these measures, the Central American Free Trade Agreement and the Free Trade Area for the Americas. But for some reason, the people who supposedly are representing us in our best interests are selling out to other interests.
Well, I think that we only have to go in the origin of the CIA. The man who organized it was a man named Alan Dulles. He was a protege of Colonel House, who was around during the First World War, was deeply involved in the occult and dedicated to this idea of world government. The Central Intelligence Agency operates outside of all bounds of control and certainly is not answerable to the legislative body of government, to the duly elected representatives. The CIA ran a lot of the war over in Vietnam. They ran a covert war. They ran Operation Phoenix, where they killed 40,000 civilians and where they tortured people. They did terrible, terrible things. They have their military units, their own independent military units. Their own independent military units are operating in Afghanistan today, and they're parallel to both special forces and to the American military. It was CIA interrogators at Abu Ghraib prison who were actually encouraging the staff there to, as they said, soften up the people. And, of course, nobody in the CIA has been charged for any of their crimes, because when you're with the CIA, you have a license to kill. So I think that the American people have to understand that we have something which is almost an invisible government. There was even a book written called The Invisible Government about the Central Intelligence Agency. It is running the war in Afghanistan. It is very quietly running the war in Iraq, working behind the scenes. They have their own separate military teams. We hear about all these contractors that are over there. Many of these people, of course, are ex-military, ex-special forces, ex-Delta Force, ex-SEALs. They're being hired by the CIA, and they're, of course, killing the opposition. Very effectively, the government can't do that. Our military can't do it, but the CIA can. And what the American people really don't understand, we have forces at work in our society that have no moral code at all. Their ultimate goal is the same as that of Colonel House and Alan Dulles: a new world order, a new world religion. Let's go to Carl. Let's see, who do we have on the line?
I'm Carlos.
Oh, Carlos, you're still there. Okay, we had somebody else calling. Go ahead, Carlos.
Oh, well, yeah, just a final comment. You described it very aptly. The same families that are running the drug trade are also in control of our intelligence agencies, and therefore the blunders that John W. mentioned were deliberate to provide a justification for these for their international corporations, which they control, to then go into Iraq, the Middle East, and eventually Africa and South America, and take over the resources of all these countries, which is their ultimate goal. And of course, that will pave the way for a one world government eventually.
Okay, amen to that. Thank you so much, Carlos. Did you have a comment on that, John?
Well, Carlos, I always enjoy listening to your analysis. You have really studied this in depth.
Let me just comment. Carlos talks about these families that have been involved in the drug trade for generations. The origin of the Skull and Bone Society, the secret society to which Prescott Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and then the grandson George W. Bush all belonged to, the secret society was formed by a man named Russell, who came from the Russell family, which is deeply involved in the drug trade with China back in 1832 when the Skull and Bone Society was founded.
Yep.
And, of course, the drug company funded many of the great fortunes and many of the great banking interests. And the drug trade has always been there working behind the scenes, exploiting human weaknesses and, of course, killing their opponents. Could these things be going on? Well, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the Russell family, or the Russell Trust, still owns the tomb, the meeting place of the Skull and Bones back there at Yale. And if you haven't read America's Secret Establishment by Professor Sutton, that tracks these intergenerational groups, certainly working within certain family lines and bloodlines, going all the way back into the 1830s, and, of course, these same groups are in positions of power today. Has anybody ever asked how it could be that we have two members from one family who become presidents of the United States and another son is the governor of the state of Florida? Is that a sort of smack of some sort of a family dynasty? And, of course, the Kennedys would have done the same if they hadn't killed Jack and they hadn't killed Bobby. They were going to become a family dynasty, too, but, you see, they weren't of the Blue Bloods. They were at Skull and Bones or Council on Foreign Relations. They were usurpers, and that's why, of course, well, you've all heard this story about Saran, as Saran, who stood in front of Bobby Kennedy and fired at him, but the shots that killed Bobby Kennedy came from behind. That's an entirely different story. Anyway, we've never gotten the true story of the assassination of John Kennedy or Bobby Kennedy or Martin Luther King or any of the others. Okay, John, let's talk about some of the things that you see going on over there in the Middle East. Are you concerned about the fact that Seymour Hersh's statement that we are having today special forces units operating clandestinely in Iran in preparation for an attack on Iran?
Well, I'm very concerned about this, Dr. Stan, because, and I do believe that his statement and information is correct, because this will probably cause Tehran to react with a so-called spectacular operation in the United States, possibly in the very near future. And we know now that Tehran, or the Iranian government, does have an arsenal of nuclear warheads, as they do various range missiles. And even the shorter range missiles could be launched from some of the vessels of their fleet of merchant ships and tankers.
Don't forget that they have three submarines that they could mount missiles on as well. Just
yes.
Lay them off, one off the East Coast and one off the West Coast, and this could be done. And we
yes.
know they have. In fact, Yosef Budansky has written a book where he talks about it. Yosef Budansky was chairman of the House Committee on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, and I really believe Budansky, and I know you've interviewed him, as has I. Budansky, I'm sure, has strong ties to the Mossad, where you're really going to get the information that our government doesn't want you to get. And, you know, writing several years ago, Budansky was talking about the fact that Iran already had nuclear weapons. But they've never told the American people that.
Yes. In fact, I believe the last time when I had Budansky on my program, which was probably 4 to 6 months ago, he said in very certain terms that at that time, Iran was a nuclear power.
No, she doesn't have a lot of weapons, but she's actually bought these on the open market. So she purchased nuclear weapons, of course. Then she's gotten her technology, her missile technology, from Communist China, which got their missile technology from the United States. And nobody's ever been tried for treason for giving the Chinese Communists the missile technology that they've given to North Korea, that they've given to Pakistan, they've given to Iran, they've given to Saudi Arabia. Why isn't anybody concerned about that? Why is nobody has ever been tried for treason for transferring the highest, most secret technology we have, which has allowed China to MIRV their missiles and, of course, to target them at sites not only all throughout the Middle East, but also right here in the United States. It's almost like we're intensely creating the best enemy that American technology can create and American money can buy.
Yes, as Anthony Sutton said, the West has been supplying the former Soviet bloc and the current regimes within Russia and China with the best technology that money can buy, basically. And we've paid a dear price in the past during the Vietnam War when Russian trucks made by Ford, their Gorky plant, were used against U.S. GIs in Vietnam. And the same has been true ever since. And in answering your question regarding why has not anyone been held accountable regarding the stolen secrets from White Sands, New Mexico, it's due to the very sophisticated manner which is described so well by Gordon Thomas on how these how this information was acquired by the Chinese communists. And by the way, Dr. Stan, when you get towards the end of the book, Seeds of Fire, he starts to mention some of the various contacts which were rather interesting between the Chinese and the Taliban on December 11th, 2001, in which they were willing to provide the Taliban with the most sophisticated systems for air defense against incoming aircraft, and they were also assisting Osama bin Laden with the strategy behind what apparently became 9/11 here in the United States, the bombing of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, if that indeed is true. But in any case, they did assist the Taliban and Osama bin Laden and his al-Qaeda movement. And Gordon Thomas substantiates this upon various documents that have been uncovered.
And, of course, these are things that are never mentioned in the United States. Again, the book is Seeds of Fire by Gordon Thomas, who's a British writer.
One of the most brilliant people besides Dr. Stan that I've ever come across.
Well, flattery gets you almost anything, but no, Gordon Thomas is in the class by himself. I'm not brilliant. I simply have an opportunity to talk to an awful lot of smart people. But Thomas really is a fascinating individual who has accumulated very, very important information that is totally censored here in the United States. So there's simply very little doubt at all that the Chinese communists are encouraging and helping to finance al-Qaeda and using them as a surrogate to attack the United States. With the full help and support of the United States is doing everything they can to build up communist China, and it really doesn't make sense, I think, unless we realize that behind everything going on, there's another agenda. And there really are spiritual forces which are energizing everything that's going on today. You can't understand the Nazi movement and its rise to power and its rapid ascent to becoming a major military threat to all of the world unless you understand the occult foundation of the Third Reich. I don't think you can understand anything that's going on in the Middle East today unless you understand that the Muslim faith worships Allah, and Allah is the moon god, a satanic god, a representative of Satan. This whole thing is spiritual. And fortunately, these same dark forces, many of them are working at the highest echelons of our government today. When the Clintons were in the White House, they brought in Gene Houston to conjure up spirits of Eleanor Roosevelt and of Mohandas Gandhi. When Nancy Reagan was in the White House, she was relying upon astrologers to direct the policies of her husband, Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
The people don't like to hear this sort of thing, but this is the reality. There are dark spiritual forces at work within our society today. Unless you recognize that, none of the things that are going on, the fact that the Americans are allowing the drug trade to flourish in Afghanistan today, it doesn't make any sense unless you realize that those drugs are going to corrupt people all throughout the world. Well, John, we've just got about three more minutes. Why don't you go ahead and pick up with your thoughts on what's going on?
Well, Dr. Fan, we're going to continue to lose many good men and women in the Middle East, especially in Iraq, with our current policy, unless it's changed drastically in the very near future, which will probably lead to a draft of young men and women within a few months from now. And I just hope and pray this does not occur, because if we do have a draft, our young men and women will probably be under the control of the United Nations. They will be wearing the blue helmets instead of the American GI issue. So we need to wake up, just as we need to wake up about FTAA and CAFTA.
And which is all about, of course, the destruction of American sovereignty. One of the greatest threats to our sovereignty of all time that is not being discussed by hardly anybody. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, John Spring. John, do you want to give your website out and your internet site out where they can listen to you on the radio? Why don't you do that again?
Yes. To hear our program on Sunday afternoons at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, log on to www.crusaderadio.com. Crusaderadio.com. For those of you in the Inland Empire of Southern California, you can pick us up on AM 1510 KSPA. We hope in the near future that maybe we can increase our coverage, but that remains to be seen. To get a little bit more information on some of the things that I've discussed with Dr. Stan tonight, log on to www.worldstrategy.netfirms, there's an S on the end, .com, or jws.freeservers.com.
worldstrategy.netfirms.com. Well, John, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you with us, and I hope our listeners realize that we are in real trouble. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners tonight? John? Well, John, are you there? Oh, well, I guess we must have lost John under any circumstances. It's always a pleasure having John. I want to share with you my concerns. I think it's only a matter of time before we will be involved in an expanded war in the Middle East.
I think it's only
a matter of time before we are going to be involved with the war with North Korea. All you have to do is read the newspapers today and see how they're demonizing North Korea and telling us North Korea is a threat to the United States. How we're demonizing Iran, and Iran is a threat to the United States. How we're demonizing Syria and saying Syria is a threat to the United States. Oh, if we want to maintain our freedom, we're just going to have a preemptive attack on these countries. Ladies and gentlemen, everything we are doing is to inflame the entire Islamic world against the United States. You have to have Americans hating the Muslims. You have to have the Muslims hating America before you're going to be able to get the Third World War going. I believe we are facing terrible, terrible and difficult times. And my hope, of course, is that you'll do the studying, understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, educational, financial battlefield, that you'll get our material, that you'll help us educate people across America, that you'll encourage them to listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the radio, on the internet, on shortwave, on satellite. We have the ability to reach the world, but we can't do it without your help. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we certainly hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as 5 hours every weekday. We reach out across America by radio, 5 hours every day on the Internet, on three different networks, actually four different networks, 5 hours a day by satellite and 4 hours a day by shortwave. But it's quite a proposition. It's an expensive proposition, buying time on stations all across America that can reach the world with the truth. And so if you'd like to become part of our family, Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America is at war today. Our freedom, our future, our families are under attack. Well, if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, certainly my November newsletter, I recommend to you very strongly. It is the story of how we are under attack with water fluoridation. How could you say, could water fluoridation attack us? Very simply, it's attacking fertility, it's lowering the intelligence of our people, it's creating tumors, it's attacking the thyroid, it's disrupting the endocrine system, it's increasing fractures. Just to mention a few of the things, they know exactly what they're doing. They don't want you to know. And so if you'd like to get a free copy of this, what I think is an excellent newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Now, the November newsletter, the December newsletter are up there on the Internet. You can get them. You can pull them down. And feel free to copy them. Show them to people. Let them understand that their families are under attack and that they are poisoning their children. And our hope is that maybe people won't be concerned about what's happening overseas in the Middle East. They're not really concerned about what's happening in Africa. They're not concerned about what's happening in South America. But they're concerned about their children. So what you need to do is get our November newsletter, make as many copies as you have, and then circulate it as far and wide as you can. Again, if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, 1-800-544-8927. Of course, you can always go up on our website at radioliberty.com. And, of course, you go to our website. You can pull down our list of the stations. You can certainly listen to our archive programs. Or you can listen live 3 hours a day on Radio Liberty and 2 hours a day on other networks, the American Freedom Network, the Genesis Network. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products. If you get them to us, why, of course, you'll get a free four-tape set or a free video that we have manufactured. We hope many of you want to get the four-tape set on fluoride, the four-tape set on mercury, the four-tape set on aspartame, and there are videos and books that go with all of those. And, of course, we hope that you'll want to get the four-tape set on population control, because they really do tend to kill off a large part of the world's population. And if you doubt that, you need to go up on our website and pull down our Population Control Agenda monograph. And, of course, you really want to get our four-tape set on the New Order of the Barbarians. This goes into a talk that was given by Dr. Richard Day, who was medical director of Planned Parenthood, back in 1969, where he talked about how they were going to create new diseases, how they were going to withhold treatments for cancer, how they were going to limit the population by allowing diseases to spread unhampered throughout the world. People say that is too horrible to contemplate. Well, you need to hear that, you need to read the Population Control Agenda monograph. If you want to get a lot of the information, why, there's a book. We don't carry it. It's out of print. But you can get it through a used bookstore. It's called The Impact of Science on Society, written by Bertrand Russell, who talks how the elite will use diet and injections and injunctions to mold the character of our people, how we will have selective breeding. We'll have to have a certain number of young people for cannon fodder, how, of course, the population can be controlled by having a black plague sweep the world every generation, and then, of course, we won't have to worry about population. Understand there are evil and wicked people in the world, and then pray for America, pray for Radio Liberty. Until Monday at the same time, may the Lord be with you.